So taking the external solemnity of the Most Holy Rosary, this is a feast that was given to the church after the Battle of Lepanto. So quick history lesson for anybody who is not familiar with that. So the Moors, Muslims, were advancing northward into Christendom, essentially. And they were far better equipped. They were better trained. They just had a better army, and it was, by all accounts, going to be a rout of the Christian West. And so, through a long series of events, Our Lady interceded through the Most Holy Rosary, and essentially the Christian forces won a battle that they had no business winning and stopped the advance of the Moors into Christian West. And so this feast was placed on the calendar in commemoration of that battle, which takes place on the 7th of October, so the feast can be moved to the preceding weekend. And so we thank Our Lady for her intercession in that moment, because it did indeed change the course of history. But I also think that the Battle of Lepanto is something that maybe clouds our spiritual vision. Now hang in there with me for a second. I think that sometimes we're waiting for God to give us another Battle of Lepanto. We're waiting for another decisive victory that is obvious, miraculous, and clear, and that swings the pendulum of history in a way that is obvious and that we can understand. And so it may lead to us taking up our rosary as hope that maybe this will be the time that things change. Maybe after I say this rosary, thing X, Y, or Z in the world, in the church, in my parish, in my own life, will be done and over with as decisively as the Battle of Lepanto was in preserving the Christian West. And yet here we are, stuck in a time period that is confusing, stuck in the confusion of our own lives. And so what do we make of the rosary now? I believe that if we stay focused only on wanting obvious and miraculous intervention, we actually miss the profound depth, total transformation of life that is offered to us in the rosary. So we're all familiar with the quote, Padre Pio, right? The rosary is the weapon for our times. Many of you who were here for our first Candlemas saw me bring a prop sword and hold it up, talking about the Lady's intercession. But let's go deeper with that analogy. So some of you know my background in martial arts, that I wanted to be an instructor, that a black belt, all of that. One of the things that was important to impress upon people as they came wanting to learn how to defend themselves was that this is going to take a lot of work. This is going to take a lot of practice. This is going to take a lot of training. Because the moment you're in actual conflict, everything that is decision-oriented in our mind shuts down. It gets blurred. It gets foggy. And we fall back on muscle memory and training. We fall back on what is habitual to us. And so this is why we do drills over and over and over. And this is not exclusive to martial arts. Anybody who is an athlete, anybody who is trained in the military knows that you are taught to fall back on your training. Essentially, what's done is cultivation of habit that is reliable. So, we don't like that. This is why, of course, gyms are super full after New Year's, and then it drops off. This is why not everybody is an athlete. This is why everybody is not a great musician. This is what perseverance is difficult to fall in human nature. And this isn't just in the order of nature. This is also in the order of grace. Because when we talk about virtue, virtue is the consistent habit of excellence in a particular area. So that when we are tempted, when battles arise for our soul, we fall back on our training, but in fact it's not a falling back, it's a falling up. That we have so allowed these virtues, habits of excellence, to be cultivated that we know how to act, even in the midst of our confusion and uncertainty. And so, as we think of the rosary, as we think of our call to engage the world, we think of the virtue of courage, fortitude. And you're familiar, I love pointing out that Aquinas recognizes that there are two forms of fortitude, both necessary, both important. There is the fortitude that was with the men who went into the Battle of Lepanto, ready to fight against incredible odds stacked against them to face most likely death for the sake of something worthwhile. There is that fortitude. But then Aquinas says there's another form of fortitude, and it's actually more profound, which is the perseverance in the face of evil. So why would this be more profound? It doesn't seem to have the same effect that the first form of courage does. No, it doesn't, at least at first glance. But Aquinas, being a good student of philosophy, being a good student of God's desire for human nature in its redemption, understands that there are a lot of ways that you can fake those moments of fortitude. You can psych yourself up with really good music. It's not uncommon to take some form of liquid courage, to have other things that allow for that burst to just push through. But that isn't a consistent habit. That doesn't necessarily change the person from good to better. Whereas that deliberate, day in and day out, perseverance in the face of evil, of oppression, discouragement, suffering, that leads to a habitual transformation if we receive God's grace and engage with what His providence has allowed us to face. Then we are changed by God, little by little. Also, it is greater because it is, in a way, an imitation of God Himself. What we hear today in the Gospel, the Annunciation and the moment of Christ's conception, is a decisive moment. C.S. Lewis says that it is a kind of landing on enemy-occupied territory by God, the Liberator. But then for the next 30 years, he lives in obscurity, doesn't seem to do anything. And then when he preaches, teaches, for 3 years, doesn't seem to be restoring the kingdom of Israel. Even after the Paschal Mystery, the apostles are asking on the cusp of the Ascension, "So are you going to do that now?" God works slowly, quietly, perseveringly. It also is an imitation of Our Lady. These great things are said of her, are given to her. She remains with Jesus through his life and then lives after he has ascended into heaven, never drawing undue attention to herself, but patiently waiting for that final union with the Lord to whom she had given her whole being. This is why that perseverance in the face of evil is the more profound form of fortitude. And so the rosary becomes the great teacher of that. Because the rosary, as much as we can kind of stretch it out to look like a sword, is really a circle. There's a patience to going around and around and around and around, feeling as though we're back where we started. There is no obvious accomplishment. And we're led to go around and around and around, not just words, but the mysteries of the life of Christ, the life of Our Lady. Those two hearts most worthy of imitation, those two hearts most able to make ours what God desires. And so we drink in the mystery of their lives, allowing our heart to play off of theirs, speaking to God of the mysteries and the way they strike us right there. This is our training. This is the cultivation of the muscle memory, of the habit of excellence. So as we pick up our rosaries, may this feast allow us to examine the attitude of our heart towards this gift and to ask, have we received it deeply enough? No doubt we should never stop desiring a decisive change in the way that the world is, nor stop working for it according to God's will. But let that flow not from any kind of superstitious or desperate sense with the rosary, but rather with the sense that this has shaped my whole life and that I am not falling back onto something, but rather falling up into the heart of Our Lady, falling up into the heart of Jesus that transforms the whole depth of mine even before it transforms history. Because by transforming human hearts, history is changed even more profoundly than in a battle. So as we draw close to Jesus today, in that way that he perseveringly, simply, hiddenly comes to us in the Eucharist, may we allow him access to those places where we are feeling worn down and desperate, and allow his presence through the intercession of his mother to become something we habitually are attentive to, something we habitually rejoice in, something like what Our Lady experienced and experienced profoundly in saying, may it be done to me according to your word.